Get the scuttlebutt on your favorite team, The Fan, on the Odyssey, iHeart, and TuneIn apps.
Something tells me Marco thinks that's silly. You got to dip into your own stash of smelling salts. I mean, I guess I understand it. If they're having issues with health, like, hey, you want to use smelling salts? We're not providing it for you because we don't want you to blame us years down the line that smelling salts cost you your sense of smell or something. I don't know. Oh, Dewey Cox and the sense of smell. I am smell blind. You ever see Dewey Cox? Very funny.
Highly, highly underrated movie.
Yeah. Oh, very funny. A ridiculous, you know, comedy, but one of those just ridiculous ones. Very funny. He's John C. Reilly's great in it. Very funny. And the songs are pretty good, too. I would sing some.
And
but
the scenes with the Beatles are incredible.
Yeah, the scene with the Beatle in the Maharishi in India. Yeah. Jack Black plays Paul McCartney. Interesting movie. Very funny. Very funny movie. But yeah, that's the first time I've heard that. So, because I saw the report the other day that they were going to ban it, but apparently not. You're still going to be able to use your smelling salts to get all riled up. That sounds like something Roger Clemens would do. Roger Clemens would rub like Icy Hot or that atomic bomb or whatever cream all over his genitals before games. Wouldn't be surprised if he was out there using smelling salts in between innings. But if you want to use it, the NFL won't provide it. 888-808-1019. McMonagle here with you on The Fan. Big win for you. Heard David Bednar there. Big win for him. And here's the difference, right? And it just oozes it. Sometimes you just feel it. And unfortunately, and I guess I'll be fair, I was late to the party. I wanted to give Devin Williams a time to get acclimated. And then he did. He found a couple of months where he pitched, you know, pretty damn well. There was a time when Weaver came back from the injury and he wasn't pitching well. Williams was the only damn pitcher in the bullpen you trusted for a minute there. But unfortunately, that was too few and too far between. But watching Bednar pitch and then just watching him in the post game, watching him on the field, watching his mannerisms, it feels like he is welcoming the idea of going from Pittsburgh and the meaningless baseball he has played his whole career to being thrusted into this situation. Now, he failed the first time out, as well as Duvall, as well as Bird, as well as, you know, Caballero and everybody else in that miserable game Friday night. But since then, he's pitched much better. And just watching him, the difference between him and Devin Williams, and when Devin Williams got here and sulked and looked miserable and was complaining about the beard policy, and although I think it's unfair to just say they changed it for him, I think that was probably in the works for a while, and Devin Williams was just the final acquisition that had a problem with it. They were like, all right, this is getting silly. I don't think it was like they never considered it. Devin Williams said, I'm not shaving my beard. And they were like, okay, we'll change it. I think it was probably, you know, it's probably in discussion for a long time. There's probably a lot of guys who came over and, you know, was like, are we sure we're going to do this? But I'd really love to keep my beard, blah, blah, blah. And then finally, Devin Williams was the last guy that broke the camel's back and they decided to change the policy. I don't think it's fair to just say, hey, it's all, and he changed the beard policy. But he definitely had a role in it, and he looked miserable, and from the minute, he just never looked comfortable in Yankee pinstripes. He never looked comfortable being the closer for the New York Yankees with all the pressure that goes with it. Just never looked comfortable. And last night, it just felt like Bednar ate it up. That he loved the idea. Now, that doesn't mean he's going to be great. Doesn't mean we're never going to have a problem with him ever again. Who knows? But man, oh man, it was just the difference in the body language and the vibe. And, you know, I will say this about the Yankees because I'll talk about their issues and stuff. I do think they don't take into account enough of vibes. Baseball's about vibes a lot. There's a vibe, there's a direction a game is going, there's things that you can see that go beyond the numbers that you get a feel for, and I do think Aaron Boone is, you know, has been slow to move to those vibe type things. I still think he's done a good job overall. I know I disagree with many of you on that. This year, clearly not. This year he's doing a terrible job. But, like, just the vibes around Bednar felt good last night. It felt good to see a guy go out there and get, you know, five outs. And in the manner in which he did, it had to battle and throw fastballs. But like, it felt good. and then his excitement on the mound. So hopefully that's a moment that can spark the New York Yankees. 888-808-1019. Let's get back to the calls. Dave in Verona. What's up, Dave?
Yeah, I'm confused. Maybe you can help me on certain things.
I can try.
First of all, there's two things. In the ninth inning, when Dominguez walks, you got to give him a chance to steal second. Volpe swinging on the first pitch, and it should have been a hit and run at least, or take a few pitches.
Yeah. I don't agree with
that. He's stealing 80% of the 80% is still 19 out of 23 bases.
Yep.
Give Dominguez a chance to steal.
Yep. 100% agree with you. I don't know about the hit and run. That was my only thing I was going to interject. I don't know if I want to hit and run with Volpe and how much he swings and misses, but I don't disagree with you on that. I 100%. And look, if he drives the ball down the gap, we're not complaining about it. I don't mind swinging at good pitches to hit, but in that situation, I don't disagree with you. Give him a pitch or two and let him try and steal second base. I thought it as soon as he walked. I said, let's get him to second base, send him over there, and then he hits into a double play on the first pitch. I'm totally with you. That was a terrible at-bat from Volpe, who's had better at-bats. You know, got the one hit off of Eovaldi yesterday. Got the one hit off of Eovaldi yesterday. Had an RBI single. Had an RBI single against Leiter today. So his obviously the big home runs as well. So he's been much better offensively. He was great defensively in this series as well. I'm feeling a lot better about Anthony Volpe. But you are not wrong. In that spot, got to take a pitch or two. At least you got to take a strike and give Dominguez a chance to get over to second base. Totally agree with you.
Yeah, and there's one other thing. Back when the Yankees scored their runs, where's the fourth inning or whatever they scored their runs, they had first and second, I think. There was one out. I thought it was first and third. I thought they should have pinch hit. There's a weak hitter coming up. They should have pinch hit Goldschmidt earlier. When you get a chance to score, because they're not scoring. I would have pinch hit him earlier. You could tell me what the setup was. I thought it was first and third, but maybe it was first and second.
I'm trying to remember it now.
And who was coming up?
Do you know in the inning they scored the run, is that what you're saying, in the fourth?
Yeah.
What was
the setup? Were they at first and second? I know there's one out. I thought it was first and third.
No, it was first and second, nobody out, and then Volpe singled, and Bellinger to second. Bellinger scored, Dominguez to second, so it was first and second.
And who was coming up?
Dominguez tried to steal. Dominguez stole third, right? Dominguez stole third. The throwing went away. The throwing error went away. All right, just let me talk it through, okay? I'm trying to answer you. Give me a second.
Mm-hmm.
So, Volpe singled, Bellinger scored, Dominguez went to second. Then Dominguez and Volpe both stole the bases. The throw went into the outfield. Dominguez came in, Volpe to third. McMahon walked, so it was first and third, one out, and Wells coming up. I remember it too. Wells.
And they should have pitched. And that's the point. They should have pitched Goldschmidt. I thought they should have pitched Goldschmidt for Wells at that point.
I understand what you're saying, and I thought about it being aggressive. I think they talked about it. They talked about Bruce Bochy being managing it aggressively by taking out Leiter, and they brought in Milner and Wells. Here's the only issue. I don't want to have to. Then you lose your backup catcher, right? Because Wells is the catcher. So you're gonna put Rice at the catching spot, and now nothing can happen to Rice. You don't have I don't know if they even have an emergency catcher. They probably do off the top of my head. Somebody can go back there, but it's also with a runner on third and less than two outs. Wells actually leads the American League in sacrifice flies. He doesn't come through in this spot. Obviously, hits a ground ball to the pitcher. And Volpe gets caught off a third and does a good enough job to get into a rundown to at least allow McMahon to get to third base. So it was really no harm, no foul. But all Wells has to do is hit a fly ball there. Like if you need the base hit or something, you're not necessarily wrong. You could have been more aggressive there and tried to really blow the game open and bring in a pinch hitter, whether it be Stanton or whether it be Goldschmidt. Obviously, it'd probably have to be Goldschmidt because you're not going to blow two players in one spot because you'd have to put Goldschmidt into the game. So you got to pinch hit Goldschmidt there. Look, you could say that, but let's be honest. When he pinch hit him, won him the game. You know, pinch hitting him later in the game won them the game.
I understand. Was Goldschmidt batting? Was he batting against? You pitching him? Was he batting against the lefty at that point? The point we're talking about.
Yeah,
he's facing a left.
Yeah, Milner is a left. Yeah, the reliever they brought in that inning would have been a lefty. It was a lefty against Wells.
Yeah, and with 400, he's betting, and yes. Goldschmidt bets 400 against.
He does. He's killed. It's early. It's early in the game. All you need is a fly ball. You do not need a base hit. Wells leads the American League in sacrifice flies. I don't know if you want to go to your backup catcher that early in the game. I mean, it's the fourth inning. God forbid something happens to Rice or something. You could do it. It's not crazy. You needed that win. You want to score some runs. I don't necessarily have a problem with it there, but when he pinch hit him, won him the game. He pinch hit for Wells in the seventh. And it won him, and he hits the home run that wins him the game. So it's hard to complain about not using Goldschmidt earlier when he used him, won him the game. Who knows what happens if he pinch hits him in that fourth inning? But moving forward, like the question, because in this game it's hard to knock it because they won the game anyway. And when he did pull the Goldschmidt card, and he hit a home run that won the game, that gave him the lead that ended up being enough to win the game. So. In this one time, it's hard to get on him. But moving forward, how aggressive should he be with the platoon guys they have on the bench, the guys who are legitimately good hitters against left-handed pitching? How early in the game are you willing to pinch hit for Wells, specifically the catcher? In what situation, like if there's two outs there and you're looking to break the game open, or say you're down a run, bases loaded, two outs in the fourth. Bases loaded, two outs. They just brought in a lefty in the fourth inning. Wells against the lefty in that spot, knowing you need to score. It's time, you know, that's when you can pull him. First and third, you just took the lead. All you need is a sacrifice fly from Wells. I don't have a problem leaving him in the game in the fourth inning, knowing that then you don't have an emergency catcher. They sent J.C. Ascara down. It's Wells and it's Rice. That's it. That's a little early to pinch hit for your catcher. When all he needs is a fly ball. And you're ahead in the game anyway at that point. If they were behind, but I could see your overall point about being more aggressive earlier in the game with pinch hitters. Especially if you're going to have Stanton on the bench too. You got to be willing to pull that plug. Like, how early would you be willing to fire Stanton? Fifth inning? Say it's the fifth inning. Again, fifth inning, Wells coming up. Fifth inning, McMahon coming up. Lefty coming up. Bases loaded, two outs, you're down a run in the fifth. They bring in the lefty to face McMahon. I mean, you might want to go to Stanton right there and see if you could break open the game in the fifth, fourth. Typically, you'd like to wait for, you know, later in the lineup, later in the game, but you might see that, like, with the team they have right now, especially with Judge still DHing and adding Stanton to that bench. Theoretically, you could have Rice as a lefty, Stanton as a righty. You got Rosario as a righty who's good against left-handed pitching. You could have Goldschmidt on the bench right-hand. Like, they could have legitimately good options, guys with really good numbers. And that's what they did at the trade deadline, too. That's what they added to this team. Like, you could have guys literally pretty damn good off the bench there to make big-time pinch-hit roles, and knowing you might even have further ones. Right? You might save Stanton and pinch-hit Rosario, although... That's you might want to do that to help the defense. That's the other thing too. Pinch hitting Wells at the catcher is a specific thing because the Yankees don't have a quote unquote backup catcher, especially if Rice is playing first base that day, which it was the case today. Now you're moving around. Now if you pinch hit for Wells, it has to be with Goldschmidt because you're going to put Goldschmidt into the game at first base anyway. You can't pinch hit Stanton there and waste both of them. Can't pinch hit Stanton and have to put Goldschmidt into the game and lose both of them in one move. So it's got to be Goldie. You know, I thought the other night, same thing came up. Runner on third, less than two outs. Wells against the lefty. And the only guy he had on the bench was Rice. And I'm like, wow, do you pinch hit Rice right now just because you like the at-bat of Rice better? A lot of people were complaining you should have pinch hit Rice. Well, stinks right now, which I agree with. But again, it was runner on third, less than two outs. He leads the American League in sacrifice flies. And I know that was a Rice who's not hitting the way he's hitting right. That's not a Wells right now. That's earlier in the season. Maybe a Wells who isn't struggling as much as he is right now. But it's hard to do that, you know, especially when all you need is a fly ball. You're not even asking for a base hit. Put the ball in play, and both times he hit a ground ball back to the pitcher. Both times. Wells has got to be better. He's killing them right now. There is no question. And I'll tell you this. I said it yesterday. I'll say it again today. Watching, I know he had the catcher's interference late in the game, but Rice is fine behind the plate. Rice battled through with William with Warren yesterday, you know, or the other day now. Battled through with him, was there with him, holding his hand with him, getting out of jams with him. Like, I think Rice is fine behind the plate. I think we're getting to the point where the best team is Goldschmidt at first and Rice behind the plate. And Wells is your backup catcher. That's the best team right now. Wells is playing his way out of being the starting catcher, and Rice is doing a good enough job. Steven in Stamford. What's up, Steve?
Hey, how are you?
Good. How are you, buddy?
I'm doing okay. I'm just going to change it up a little bit.
Sure.
I know you've been talking about the Yankees.
I started with the Mets. We can talk Mets. Let's go.
No, I wasn't in the car yet, so I was still at work. But
no worries.
Let me just say that I was at the game on Tuesday night, and it just became so obvious. I was at the Met game Tuesday night.
Yeah.
That it seemed like neither Nimmo nor Alonso and a few other players could catch up to, I mean, granted, they're major league pitching. It's 97, 98-mile-an-hour fastballs. But they looked overmatched. And it wasn't just like once. It was multiple times during the same at-bat. Like, they couldn't catch up to it. And then when I heard, you know, when I saw the highlights from this morning that, you know, Gutierrez Jr. is catching up to 104-mile-an-hour fastball and putting it
in
the moon.
Against Mason Miller, yeah.
Yeah, so, I mean, like,
the fastest pitch to ever be turned around for a home run in the, history of baseball, or at least, you know.
But the other pitchers, it's like they have a cheat code against the Mets. They know, put it high, they'll swing, they'll miss. And it's even affecting, I think, even Soto, because he's swinging and missing more than he's ever had before.
Yeah.
Or so it seems to me.
And chasing outside the zone more than I ever remember him doing.
Right. Right, exactly. So is it just because they're in a funk?
Yeah.
Is it that it's too late in the season, that they're getting tired, that they need a blow?
No, I don't think that's it. I mean, I think most of it's that they're in a funk. I mean, listen, we've seen, you know, Nimmo turn around fastballs, and thank you for the call. And most major league hitters can catch up to heat if they're, you know, looking for it. That's, you know, as you mentioned, Gurriel hit 104-mile-an-hour fastball. 104 from Mason Miller, which, by the way, tell me again, like, Mason Miller has struggled. Blew the game for San Diego. Blew the game. Had an ERA over 3. He's not, like, been this dominant reliever. The idea, and I'm sorry, I've heard it from too many people now, the idea that the Yankees didn't go all in for, like, a Mason Miller type and settled for Bednar. Tell me where Bednar is so much worse than Mason Miller. And they gave up the third best prospect in all of baseball for him. And he's blown as many games as David Bednar has. He threw a 104-mile-an-hour fastball that Gurriel launched into left center field. But yeah, turned around 104 and pulled it too, like a 104-mile-an-hour fastball, and just absolutely crushed it. But when guys are late on fastballs, it's because they're off balance. You're late on fastballs, you're out in front of the breaking balls. That's the epitome of a slump, my man. I don't think it's anything that he can't catch up to, that he's too tired. I think he's caught in between. That's when you're not going well, that's it. You're late on fastballs, you're ahead of breaking stuff. That's the name of the game. That's when you're off balance, your timing is all off. And he was 0 for 10 with 7 strikeouts in this series with 3 walks. He was miserable in this series. He killed them. Juan Soto was not good, you know, 3 for 10, same thing. Like, that's the difference between Juan Soto struggling and everybody else struggling. Juan Soto struggles, he's on base a bunch, hits a home run, scores a couple runs on, you know, 3 out of 10, but it's still not enough. Those 3 hits weren't impactful enough. That home run came when they were down 4-0 in the 9th inning. Yes, it was nice to avoid a no-hitter, but, and again, if you're a Yankee, if you're a Met fan, I could understand the frustration with, you know, I saw a couple of Met fans just now as I was scrolling through Twitter, unhappy with him, admiring the home run, unhappy with the smiles, unhappy with him and Marte having fun in the dugout over it. Like, these are ball players today. This is how it works. Same thing with people with Jazz. I heard a guy calling in with Keith. I had a guy calling with me saying that Jazz would never be on the team with George Steinbrenner. And, a guy called into Keith as I was driving in today talking about, he's just not a winning player. Like, that's... I know he made a boneheaded play. And I know... And I don't think anyone questions whether or not Juan Soto's a winning player. Clearly, he's won a World Series. He's very much a winning player. But, like, the idea of showboating and the idea of watching the home run or celebrating or being too happy or whatever else that we don't like. We want our players to be miserable. We want our players to be joyless and just robotic and matter of fact. And when they're losing, be, so torn up they could barely speak. And if they do something in a game where that doesn't win them the game, they shouldn't even celebrate it. But that's just not the nature of sports or competition or players today. And the idea that we know Jazz is not a winning player, as a caller mentioned earlier to Keith, that's such crap. Because he had a bad postseason last year for the Yankees. Have you seen what he's done in the regular season for the New York Yankees? He's in a slump right now, and he just had a really boneheaded play and then, couldn't admit failure and went into the postgame and said, hey, I'm trying to be aggressive. I should always try and be aggressive. And they said, would you change anything about it? Would you do it again? He's like, yeah, I would do it again. I don't think he means I would get caught off of first base and doubled up again. Yeah, that's no problem. He means I'm going to try and be aggressive and try and make a play. If I feel there's a play to be made, I'm going to go do it, and I don't regret it even though I'm out. Stupid. Don't get me wrong. He should have been like, I'm too aggressive. Next time I'll be a little bit more aware. Instead, he just said, no, I'm going to be aggressive. That's who I am. Who cares? Who cares? I could care less. I couldn't care less. I did a pet peeve of mine. I don't when people say I could care less. Couldn't care less. But the idea is not a winning player because he made one boneheaded play, or that he celebrates home runs, or that he's struggling at the moment, or that he had one bad postseason he's played in his career. Like, get out of here, man. People are so quick to say not a winning player. Who wasn't a winning player? Alex Rodriguez. Who wasn't a winning player? Peyton Manning. Who wasn't a winning player? John Elway. Who wasn't a winning player? Dan Marino. Oh, damn it, he wasn't a winning player. Come on. Alex Rodriguez was the epitome of not a winning player. So much to the point that people actually use this. Here, I know some people get on me for calling fans stupid or something. Here's a stupid one. If you're a Yankee fan trying to knock Aaron Boone or knock the accountability factor of the New York Yankees right now, here's a suggestion. If you want to talk about accountability with the New York Yankees and you want to bring up examples, don't bring up examples that don't work. This is a little pet peeve of mine, just a little, the idea, I can't tell you how many people bring up the idea that Joe Girardi got on Gary Sanchez. And you see, this was the problem with Aaron Boone. Okay? Let me just tell you that right now. Joe Girardi, who was fired, which by the way, he just wasn't brought back. His contract expired, they didn't give him a new one. Joe Girardi was not fired. So just a quick reminder on that. But Joe Girardi was fired because he was too hard on Gary Sanchez. He went out and publicly mocked. They told him he wasn't good enough defensively. Yeah, that's the problem with this organization. Aaron Boone would never say any crap like that. At least Joe Girardi had the guts to make it public that, Gary Sanchez was terrible as a catcher. Well, that's a great example, and I agree with you. Joe Girardi did go out publicly and say what we all knew about Gary Sanchez and his defensive struggles. Did it help? Did it help? Did Gary Sanchez get better defensively? Now, you can say he got worse under Aaron Boone. He was an all-star under both of them. He was an all-star in 17. He was an all-star in 19. His defense was bad in 17, and it never got better in 17. Nothing that Joe Girardi did made it any better. And isn't that the point? Isn't the point we want the players to respond, not just that we want to hear what we want to hear? What's the point? Are you just happy that Joe Girardi said things you wanted him to say? Or are you happy because he got the better out of the play? He got the players to perform better. That's what it's about. You can do it Boone style. You can do it Girardi style. You can do it Pinella style. You can do it Torrey style. I don't care how you do it. As long as you get the best results. Now, I think it's fair to say that Boone has not gotten the best results this year. So try something different. Fair argument. And you can point to the idea that he doesn't call out players publicly and point to that. Fine, I'm not going to push back on the idea that he should or shouldn't. He doesn't believe in it. I don't think it means you can't be successful that way, but this year they're not, so why not try something different? I'm on board. But don't point to Joe Girardi getting all over Gary Sanchez as, see, Girardi got on them. He still stunk defensively. It didn't help him at all. And then the other one people like to use, which is just mind-numbing to me, on accountability. And don't tell me you can't do it to stars either. Because Joe Torrey moved Alex Rodriguez to eighth in the lineup. Alex Rodriguez was terrible in the postseason. He was terrible in the Boston series in 04. He was terrible against the Angels in 05. He was incredibly bad in 06 against the Tigers. And Joe Torrey said, enough of this crap. We're going to hit him eighth. That's accountability. Did you see what happened when they hit him eighth? It was a disaster. It brought down the whole team. It made it about that instead of the game. It's one of the worst decisions Joe Torrey ever made in a postseason series. Like, don't use that as an example. Don't use examples of when it didn't work. Please stop. I can't take it anymore. I heard a caller the other day mention this one. They moved Alex Rodriguez to eighth in the lineup. That's, if you can move Alex Rodriguez to eighth, then you can tell, you know, Jazz that he's got to sit. Or whatever other stupid thing you want to correlate it to. It was a disaster moving Alex Rodriguez to eighth. You make it sound like if that's a good story if they move him to eighth and he hits two home runs hitting eighth, then that's a good story. But you can't tell me. Accountability. We moved Alex Rodriguez down to eighth, and then he was miserable, and the team lost that game and lost the series, and it became about that instead of the team. Oh, my God. You guys make me laugh. It's crazy. It's crazy. There's a video of Joe Girardi going around, a clip of his post game, getting on Gary Sanchez, and people are using it like, see what? See a manager say something different than what Boone says, but gets the same results Boone got? Like, what are you talking about? Gary Sanchez was terrible defensively and only got worse, no matter what Joe Girardi said. It's so funny. You got to have Joe Girardi back. Guy got fired in Philadelphia, and they went on a run to the World Series. But got, and I liked Joe, and I didn't want Joe gone. I thought the Yankees made a huge mistake when they let go of Joe. I thought he earned another contract. But man, oh man. We'll just say anything. You just want to hear what you want to hear. It's not about whether or not they actually do it. It's about if it works. And if your argument is what Boone's doing isn't working, so try it. Agreed. Pull someone out of the game. Change it up. Do it a little bit differently. I know they say it's hard to change things up once you've kind of, you know, he's been this guy the entire time. Now all of a sudden he's going to start pulling guys off the field that won't feel genuine. I don't care. I'm not trying to have the authentic Aaron Boone. I'm trying to get the best out of the team. Now, I don't want to instill panic either, but if you want to pull a guy off for making a mistake, do it for once. So I'm not trying to say that Aaron Boone shouldn't do things differently or hold accountable, but like, stop pointing the failures and say, you see? At least get an example of where it worked. And now I forget the other one that people want to point to as an example that worked. Here we go. This is a good one. Hinch, the manager of the Detroit Tigers the last couple of years. Last year, Baez, who was terrible during that season last year and has been terrible for the Tigers up until this season, one of the worst contracts in the sport, Met fans know him very well, as they traded Pete Crow Armstrong for him. He had a bad move on the base path, and Hinch went into the dugout, talked to him, and then took him out of the game. And there's been like a video of that circulating, and people pointing to you. Oh, how are we? Oh, wow. What a novel idea. How amazing this is. Look at that. He's actually tough on his players. And look, now he's having a great year the next year. Okay. Or whenever it was. One, Javier Baez was an all-star who got that contract. It's not like the idea that Javier Baez suddenly became good because he got sat down is funny. But okay, let's say that worked. Okay. Let me ask you a question about accountability with Hinch. 2017, the team is cheating. The team is banging on trash cans while they have a monitor up in the right behind the dugout in the clubhouse. They're relaying signs, trash can banging, stealing pitches. We all know the scandal. Hinch is the manager for that team, by the way. Hinch went into the hallway behind the dugout and was so unhappy about what was going on, which apparently he didn't order anything. He didn't have nothing to do with. He was so unhappy that they were cheating, and he was so satisfied and wanted no part of it and wanted it to stop so badly, and he wanted to hold his players accountable so badly that he took a baseball bat and he smashed up the monitor. Took a baseball bat to it and broke it into 1,000 pieces. At least this is his report. This is what he talked to and told MLB Baseball. The next day, a new monitor was up. The next day, the manager of the team was holding the players so accountable that he took a baseball bat and smashed to smithereens the screen that they were using to cheat at a level we haven't seen in the history of baseball. Smashed it to smithereens. The next day, a new monitor was put up. He really held them accountable. They got that message loud and clear. And that's the team that won him a championship that we will praise him for being the manager. Now, he's done a nice little job in Detroit. There's no doubt about that. He's turned that team around pretty quick, and we'll see if that helps. But again, tell me how this dude held his players accountable. All right, so he yelled and took one guy out of a game. I applaud him. He tried to send a message to his team that cheating wasn't going to be accepted, and they went and put the screen right back up. But that's a great manager who holds his team accountable. You see what I'm getting at?
Your friends pretend they know sports. WFAN actually does. Get smarter, louder, and way more annoying at watch parties. The Fan, 101.9 FM, and always streaming on the Odyssey, iHeartRadio, and TuneIn apps.
McMonagle here with you on The Fan, 888-808-1019. So ESPN and WWE made a deal yesterday. ESPN making big deals. NFL, WWE. They are now the new home, starting next year, of premium live events for WWE. And it's going to be on the ESPN app. Or a streaming service that's coming out, rather. And it sounds like, and this is where it impacts my life, maybe your life, I don't know, but I have two young sons who love wrestling, big wrestling fans. And not that I wouldn't, I mean, but it's going to be $30 for this ESPN thing. Now, if it's going to come with the NFL as well, and I'm going to need it for Red Zone and all that stuff, then I probably would have bought it anyway, but... And just, you know, what we do, what I do for a living, I probably have to buy ESPN. I don't know. You never know when I might need it. But it sounds like it's going to be $30 a month. So now, just if you're a WWE fan who wants to consume all of their content, right? Say that's you want to do. You're a big WWE guy. It's the only thing you love. You want to consume all of their content. You have to pay now $30 a month for their premium live events, which is, you know, their big, you know, SummerSlam, WrestleMania, Royal Rumble, Money in the Bank, Survivor Series, you know, Clash in Berlin or whatever other premium events they're going to have. Saturday night, you know, the Saturday night main event. I don't know if that's going to fall into it. Probably will. So you got $30 a month for their premium events. Then you got to spend on Netflix, and I'm not sure I think it's $25 a month for Netflix. You got to get Netflix because that has Monday Night Raw. And I think Peacock is still going to have all of the, you know, WWE app, the original streaming service, the WWE streaming service, all of the archive stuff. So like all of the, you know, it's not going to have the premium events anymore. It doesn't have, you know, SmackDown or Raw, but it's going to have all of the documentaries, all of the different things that come out. So I don't go old matches, old WrestleManias, old Royal Rumbles, old, like, so if you want to do that too and have access to that, you got to have Peacock, you got to have Netflix, and you got to have ESPN to consume everything that WWE is going to provide. That's a lot. That's a lot to try and, you're not going to be all over the place. So, I mean, it used to, at least Peacock had the premium live events as well as the catalog, and then it was just Netflix. Now you're adding ESPN, and I mean, if you don't care about old Royal Rumbles, you can get rid of Peacock, I guess. And I don't know if that's ever going to transition or what the deal is with Peacock, but it doesn't sound like it is right now. And I would assume Peacock is holding on to that for a bit. Like, you're going to need a lot. I'm going to have to need all these streaming services just to keep my kids happy. Let alone all the skins he wants for Fortnite and everything, which I don't let him play much, but he wants skins that, like, people you play with. That's how that game gets you. It's a free game. You download the game. As soon as you get to play it, PS5, you download Fortnite, no big deal, free. But then it's like, oh, you got to buy this, you got to buy that. Oh, not only do I want to play as Bruno Mars, but I need the you know, the dollar bill backpack that he wears. Like, it's amazing. And now all the WWE stuff, which, by the way, listen, don't get me wrong, love the product. I'm back in. I'm back. They've got me back. The kids love it. We just went to SummerSlam. It's awesome. I'm a huge fan, and it's as good as it's ever been. It's really, I mean, I'm a little bit partial to the Attitude Era and Stone Cold Steve Austin. I don't want to talk too much wrestling here, but like it's a really good product right now. But I mean, this ESPN, now you gotta get it to watch the Red Zone, WWE, ESPN making moves, NFL and WWE, two big products ESPN has taken over. I mean, we'll see how that streaming service goes. But that is another massive deal for ESPN and another massive deal for WWE, and you got to buy a lot of stuff. You got to buy a lot of stuff. 888-808-1019. McMonagle here with you on The Fan. The other thing that first of all, I know the Yankees lost 2 out of 3 to Philadelphia, and they did the Mets no favors, but I mean, now Cleveland is tied with the Texas Rangers with being a game and a half behind the New York Yankees. I mean, thanks a lot. As a Yankee fan, you couldn't take one. But they are now a game and a half behind the New York Yankees along with the Texas Rangers. And the one good thing about that win yesterday, there's a lot of good things about that win yesterday, but earlier in the season, the Yankees swept the Texas Rangers at home at Yankee Stadium. So now with that one win, the Yankees did guarantee themselves a tiebreaker over the Texas Rangers. And the tiebreaker is good for everything. Like, if they are the last two teams in, there's not going to be a game 163. The tiebreaker just goes to the winner. So if the Yankees and Rangers are tied at the end of the season for the final wild card spot, the Yankees will be going to the playoffs. And the Guardians, they each won a series. So I don't know what the next tiebreaker would be. But the only teams in contention really here, You know, the Kansas City Royals are now four games back. The Yankees haven't lost to the Royals all year. So they have the tiebreaker over Kansas City. They would have the tiebreaker over Tampa Bay. They'd have the tiebreaker over Seattle, and Seattle is a game up. So the Yankees do have a lot of the tiebreakers in their favor. The Red Sox, obviously not, and then for the division. I think the Yankees would have to sweep. I don't know if the Yankees have already lost the season series to the Red Sox. I'm trying to think. They've played six games, and the Red Sox have won five. So they still have to play another seven games. No, so it's not over just yet. But it's looking like they would not have the tiebreaker over the Boston Red Sox. But they do own the tiebreaker over Seattle. So if they're tied with Seattle, they would jump them for the second wild card or whatever. So they do have that in their favor, the Yankees, other than Cleveland. And I'd have to look to see what the second tiebreaker is because they each won. They're each 2-2 against each other heads up. Or 3-3, rather. 3-3 against each other heads up. But at least with that win against the Rangers, it's not just a game and a half. It's like 2.5 over the Texas Rangers. Because if they finish tied, the Yankees will win the tiebreaker over the Rangers, will win the tiebreaker over the Mariners. And the Royals and the Rays, who, you know, probably aren't in the mix here, but are close enough where I'm going to mention it, they have the tiebreakers over them as well. So that was a good win yesterday for the New York Yankees. They needed that. That would have been, you know, the idea that whatever the next tiebreaker is, if they got swept by Texas, would be in play. They would currently be sitting behind the Texas Rangers for that final wild card spot. That's a disastrous loss. And one that I honestly feel would have been one that hung over this manager. Like that one win really did do a lot. Now they have to go and make it stick because as I said, the division, this next series, you are looking at a very difficult pitching matchup. These first two games against the Astros are going to be, I mean, you got Brown against Schlittler, and you've got Valdez against Luis Gil. Those are two really tough games. Those are really tough pitching matchups. And we are, make no mistake, that was a nice win, and they desperately needed it, and hopefully they found their closer, and hopefully they've, you know, got that one win, head home, feel better about themselves, but they're right back in it Friday night in the Bronx. And I know we heard boos at Citi Field. We are going to hear boos. Like, that's why I thought that the manager could get fired if they lost that game, because think every time he would step on the field, think of it might still happen with how upset the fan base is. But I mean, Boone is now in the crosshairs. It's been Hicks, it's been Donaldson, it's been Gallo, it's been Anthony Volpe, it's been Boone on some level. But the minute Boone steps out of the dugout to take out a pitcher, it would have been, and it still might very well be, but it would have been the entire building booing Aaron Boone. And they would not be able to play it off as if they're saying Boone. But thankfully, they got that win, and now they head into a series against the Astros. And again, you know how I feel about it. I'm excited about it. And I love the idea that Carlos Correa is back with them. I want revenge. I want revenge over the Astros. You got Jerry Garcia bobblehead night on Friday. Then you got Old Timers Day on Saturday celebrating the championship team. Wait, they have two Jerry Garcia bobblehead nights? Friday and Sunday are Jerry Garcia bobblehead? You need two? Don't get me wrong, I love the Grateful Dead, but and Cherry Garcia is one hell of an ice cream, but you need two Jerry Garcia bobblehead days? Jerry Garcia bobblehead game on Friday night. Let me look at the picture. Okay. And on same bobblehead. That's weird. Why would you have the same promo on two nights of the same series? You got to go next Wednesday against the Twins for the Aaron Judge MVP bobblehead. And let me just say that. If there's ever been a better time to have the Minnesota Twins show up to Yankee Stadium, like has there ever been a better time to have the Minnesota Twins show up, because it doesn't matter, right? There are just teams. Minnesota, they play the Yankees. Yankees win. It's that simple. I think, what has it been, one series loss in the last like 15 years? It's that dramatically crazy. So they've already sold their pieces. They traded their stud reliever, Duran. They traded a bunch of relievers. They have given up on the year in probably more than any other team in baseball. So it is, thankfully, it will be a welcome sight to welcome the Twins into the Bronx. And we talk about that Yankee schedule and how favorable it is. After this Houston Astros series, they have three against the Twins at home. Then they go on the road, and they have three against the Cardinals, who also sold their closer, but, you know, have still been a decent enough team, but they're fading. But that's a team that the Yankees should beat. Then they have a quick two-game series in Tampa against the Rays, who have not played well. Then a four-game set at home against the Boston Red Sox, which will probably be, you know, that's going to be a huge series. A four-game home set against the Boston Red Sox. Then they're at home three against the Nationals. Then they go to Chicago for a four-game set against the White Sox to end the month. Then to start September, they're in Houston for three, followed by, and this is where the beginning of September is tough, Houston at home for Toronto and Detroit. And then three to finish the Boston series in Boston. But then this is how they end the year, right? So you got an easy end of August where you're taking on the Nationals. You've got the Twins, the Cardinals, Tampa Bay, the Nationals, and the White Sox with one Boston series mixed in. But think of how many losing teams they're playing after Houston. After Houston, they're playing a Twins team that sold off, a Cardinals team that stinks, a Tampa Bay team that stinks, four against Boston, who's playing better than them right now without question, three against the last place Nationals, four against the Chicago White Sox. That's how August ends, with nothing but bad teams except the three more against Houston and then Boston. Nothing but bad teams besides that. Then you start off the month of September against good teams at Houston, home against Toronto, Detroit, and then on the road against Boston. So that the first 2 weeks of September are tough. At Houston, home Toronto, home Detroit, at Boston. But then the final 2 weeks of the season are three in Minnesota, four in Baltimore, last place Orioles, three at home against the White Sox, and then three against Baltimore. So they are finishing up the season with Twins, White Sox, Baltimore. That's where you're really looking to make your hay. They've got still another seven big games against Boston. They've got six more against the Astros. Three against the Blue Jays, three against the Tigers. Besides that, it's almost exclusively either last place teams or teams that sold their entire team at the deadline.